Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hello, Kotaku Splatoon from the JW Marriott, right next to the E3 show floor. This is Jason Schreier, and I am sitting here with the one and only Dave Lang. Hello, Dave.
Hello, Jason. How
so
are you doing?
We were just talking about your title. You are the founder and co-C3PO.
No, just exclusive C3PO.
Exclusive. What does that mean?
So
it means you're a robot.
I was the CEO.
Uh-huh.
Then we brought in Adam to do my job because I didn't want to do that job anymore. Adam Boy is formerly a PlayStation. And I needed a new title because he's the CEO.
Uh-huh.
And we thought about doing like co-CEO things, but I'm like, I don't really care about that. So people that do business with us, they expect to do like, oh, I should be talking to the C-level people.
Uh-huh.
So I had to give myself some title in the C-suite.
Yep.
And I think it's stupid.
Uh-huh.
I hate it. And so I came up with the most ridiculous thing I possibly could, which was C-3PO.
So when you meet like an executive,
yeah,
like Bobby Kotick, when you hang out with Bobby Kotick,
yeah,
which
yeah,
I assume you do all the
time.
Oh,
yeah, every Sunday.
Yeah, you say, yeah, hey, I'm the C-3PO of
yeah,
Iron Galaxy.
So I don't ever say it.
Okay.
I just, generally what I'll say is founder.
Okay.
And then, but my business card does in fact say C-3PO.
Amazing.
And when I slide it across the table to whomever it is,
uh-huh,
you know, it's one of two reactions. It's either they don't bat an eye because they didn't actually read it.
Uh-huh.
Or they're like, ha, 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 ha. Yeah. Protocol droid, get it.
Okay, got
yeah,
it. So for those people out there who have not heard of you guys, who have not followed your many appearances in the giant bombosphere,
yeah,
what is Iron Galaxy exactly?
So we are a developer based out of Chicago and Orlando. We have been around for a little over 10 years.
Yep, since the Midway implosion, correct?
Since the Midway implosion, yeah. And we do a lot of different things. People that might know us, maybe that tickles like a bit of your memory. It might be from Killer Instinct.
Mm-hmm.
We did seasons 2 and 3 after Double Helix got bought by Amazon. It might be from Divekick. Might be another thing you know us from. But if you don't know us, you've probably played and loved something that we've worked on or helped ship. Most of our business is helping other teams and publishers ship their games on time at a certain quality level.
Mm-hmm.
So, go ahead.
Did you start the company because you wanted, like, thinking we're going to make a company, we're going to outsource? Did you think we're going to make our own games? Did you,
yeah,
what did you, what was your goal overall?
So I could talk about this for, like, 12 hours straight.
Okay.
I'll give you the 3-minute version.
Okay.
I've been at a lot of companies that had folded overnight or were about to. And at the time, I was at Midway, and I was the studio tech director for Chicago. And I had a team of, like, 20 people in the ATG group, right? And it was a really, like, lofty goals. Everyone at Midway, almost everyone was on Unreal 3 at the time, right? And so the goal was like, hey, ATG group, like, if Game Team A makes, like, a cool driving system, put it into everyone else's version of UE3 so they can use it too, or someone does a crowd system or whatever it is.
Sounds smart.
It sounded smart. It didn't work in practice because all we ended up doing was fixing bugs, working on frame rate, reducing memory footprint for the next thing out the door.
Uh-huh.
And so we're a big team of firefighters, right? And when Midway started to go out of business, I was, like, really bummed out because, like, again, I'd been on a bunch of places that closed. And the worst thing about it, I'm very fortunate where I've had really a hard time finding a job because I was a pretty good engineer at the time,
uh-huh,
and pretty good connections. So I wasn't worried about finding a job. I was worried about, like, building a new team and making new friends and all that stuff.
Yep.
And so,
relocating.
Yeah. And so when I started IG, the only goal was to work with my friends for the next 30 years. Like, I don't care what we do. There's not this game in my head that needs to get out. Only thing I give a shit about, can I swear?
Sure,
the only
yeah,
thing I give a shit about
yeah,
is I get to work with my best friends until we retire, right? And everything in the company is optimized towards that goal. So
that's cool. That's
yeah,
awesome.
Yeah.
So one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you is because poking around the Chicago dev scene,
yeah,
you guys have a reputation for not crunch, which
yeah,
is like the opposite of every other video game company. You guys have a reputation for treating your workers like human beings. Who would have thought that
yeah,
would be
weird,
a strange
right?
thing?
Yeah, strange.
Is that... Because of Midway? Because of your experiences at Midway?
So I've got a pretty... I knew you asked something about this, and I was trying to think of the best way to answer it.
Yeah.
And it's like, I have a kind of a weird relationship with Crunch personally.
Uh-huh.
Like, I have this big Twitter thread where I kind of enumerated a bunch of bad things, bad Crunch experiences in my life. Like, if you've done this job long enough, you've missed a wedding.
Uh-huh.
You've missed a kid's birthday. You know, you've done something, you've made a personal sacrifice.
Hopefully I haven't missed your own wedding, but...
Yeah, not my own, thank goodness.
Whole new level.
I did cancel my first honeymoon, though.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And so that thread is like a lot about like, wow, this part sucked.
Yeah.
Right? But I personally, I don't hate crunch.
Okay.
Like I'm not a staunch anti-crunch advocate. Like I've worked on games where you crunch crazy and I had fun time doing it. You know, because I'm there with my friends and we're doing things like that. And I don't believe, like, I'm not one of these people that, like, believes, oh, after, like, 40 hours, you start making more mistakes, and it's ineffective. Like, if, you know, if game team B is working 60 hours a week and we're working 40 hours a week, they're going to have a better game than we will. Like, that's just a fact. The difference is I don't give a shit. Because, like, I'm at the point in my life, one of my, like, leadership philosophies is don't ask anyone to do something I wouldn't be willing to do myself.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point in my life, I don't want to work.
Mm.
I want to work less than 40 hours a week if I can, right? I want to spend time with my kids. And when I'm not spending time with my kids, I want to jump in Discord with my friends, drink wine, and shoot people in the face online.
Okay.
Right? That's what I want to do. I want to travel. I want to do stuff. And because I don't want to do that, it feels really crappy to ask other people to do it. And I just don't run the company that way.
So by your own logic, aren't you sacrificing the quality of the stuff you guys work on?
No, we just get more time or whatever. Like, okay. You know, there's other ways to skin the cat, right? I'm just saying, that was more to illustrate, like, I don't believe working less gets better results, like some people do.
Uh-huh.
Like,
yeah.
That was more just illustrating that point. But, like, sometimes, like, I think when people work with us, they know our policy generally, but they do it anyway because they know it's going to, like, we're often in the situation where, hey, port game X to platform Y for us, and we're getting 30 bids or whatever it is. I know we'll be in the top three most expensive and longest.
Uh-huh.
I just know we will,
uh-huh.
Right? And that just means we tend to work with people who value quality over money and people who, like, have planned their SKUs far enough in advance where they can let us take longer to do it. So we still get there, and it just costs the publisher more money, but they know it's going to be good. It's not going to be like a – it's not going to be like a – carrier landing, right?
So part of the problem with this whole conversation is that crunch means so many different things, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think there's a difference between the crunch you were talking about with your hanging with your friends for maybe like a week or two at the end of a project, as opposed to months and months of sustained crunch, which I'm sure you've also been through.
Yeah.
There is, I mean, I guess the first question is that Iron Galaxy, are you against any overtime, or are you
in favor of all.
Okay, so tell me what your overall studio policy is.
So policy is just don't work more than 40 hours a week.
Okay.
I don't want to pay you overtime.
Okay.
All right. That's our policy.
Good.
Right. With there's a lot of really subtle things that factor into crunch that I'm sure you're familiar with.
Uh-huh.
Anyone that read your article is familiar with
social pressure.
Social pressure. The person next to you is crunching. You want to compete with them for whatever, you know, salary raises or bonuses are out there.
Or your thing is going to get cut unless you finish it by this deadline.
But here's the thing, like. I and Chelsea and Adam and all the studio leadership, we've been doing this a long time, and I know I can see someone in the studio. If I'm ever there past 7, God help me, I hope not, but if I'm ever there past 7 and I see someone in the office, I can take one look at them and tell you if they want to be there or not, right? And if they don't want to be there, we make them go home. It's like, what are you doing?
So you actively go up to people and say, like, go home.
Yeah, like, it doesn't happen that much anymore because, like, right now we're 140 people, right? And everyone just doesn't crunch, and so it's very rare that anyone is there after 6, right? There's like a handful of people that just, like, Ramon is just insane. Ramon, if he's not in the office working, he's at home programming. He's just doing what he wants because he loves it, right?
Uh-huh.
And he's a grown man. I'm not going to tell him how to spend his time, right? But, like, in the beginning when we were getting started and everyone had just kind of come from Midway or come from different places, that was when, like, fear of, like, social pressure to crunch was a real thing.
Yeah.
And so back then we would have to tell people, like, hey, dude, no, like, this, you don't, this is not getting you anything. Just, like, go home, be happy or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we had to do a lot more in the first 5 years of the company than the last 5.
Yeah, well, how is that? How does one, like, fix a cultural problem like that? Like, for it to be even 5 years, that seems like it was a super difficult challenge to.
Yeah, well, it's like people have to, essentially they have to trust management.
Uh-huh.
And management has to be very unequivocal in what they say. You know, it's one thing for, like, a game studio head or CEO to say, like, hey, we don't have a crunch policy. I hate crunch. But it's harder to trust that as an employee, right? And so it takes me earning the trust of the employees, Chelsea and Adam and everyone in senior leadership earning the trust of the employees.
Mm-hmm.
Then we say, no, this is not how we want the studio to be run, that they believe us. And then we follow through with that. And we don't reward people who do crunch. And we, you know, don't work with people who want us to crunch. And when they see us walk the talk, it kind of just, like, it just fixes itself. Mm-hmm. It's one of these things where it's like there's this weird pressure at some studios to crunch, and I've been at them, and I'm part of the problem. Like, I've led several teams, and I worked 80 hours a week frequently, and I know people on the team did just because I was doing it, right? So I know what that is. The opposite is also true. When you develop a culture that is not crunchy, and it kind of feeds itself. Yeah.
It's interesting, and I imagine that part of it is, well, so have you guys had to say no to a lot of contracts because they're expecting you to crunch?
No, generally not. We said not because of that, but they see the bids larger and the timelines longer, and they'll say no to that. So it's not explicitly that they're saying no to crunch.
Right. I ask because I've heard stories of publishers that will actually be like, we expect you to, like,
there are people like that for sure, and we don't work with them. Generally, like, sometimes people don't know, though, going into the relationship that we're like this.
Uh-huh.
I think it's less now. We've had a couple times where it's like, hey, we're sending our producer out for the week, and he needs a key and a door code for the weekend. And I'm like, okay, you can come in on Saturday. He's going to be the only person here. And then they're just like a who farted look on their face.
Yeah.
And they're like, what do you mean?
I'm like, yeah, we this don't, is the video game industry. Yeah, Come on.
We don't do that. He can come and use the computer. I don't care.
Uh-huh.
The air conditioning won't be on.
Yeah.
No one else will be there, but he's feel free to do it. Generally, that's where it ends. And so they're like, oh.
Okay.
Oh. Uh-huh. And then they realize, like, there's no one to go above me.
Yeah.
And that they can complain to. Only one time has something like that happened, and we've said, hey, we're not doing that, that it's been escalated on their side. And, you know, I'll tell people no as many times as they ask. It doesn't matter to me. And if it means they don't work with us again, thankfully, at this point in our lives, you know, knock on wood, we're at a good enough spot. We have a good enough reputation where, you know, finding people who want to work with us isn't a problem.
Mm.
You know, people need us more than we need them.
Yeah. So have you found it more challenging or less challenging or whatever? When it's a different, what has the experience been like when you're working on an original game that you guys have to find the fun for and, like, prototype and actually create as opposed to doing a port for somebody else?
It's tough, right? Because, like, another practical reason we don't have crunch is just because, like, it's hard, like, again, if you don't know anything about Iron Galaxy, we're literally working on, like, with 140 people, most studios would be doing, like, 1 to 3 projects at once, right? We're doing anywhere from, like, 8 to 15 projects at once. And some of them might just be 3 people or whatever, but it's a bunch of different things. And people
porting, outsourcing.
Yeah, or just like, hey, we're helping you ship your game. We're just fixing bugs today.
Got it.
On Big Game X or whatever it is, right?
Good old Big Game X.
Yeah,
can't wait for that one.
It's coming soon.
Yeah.
I can't make people, again, I would never ask anyone to crunch on Big Game X and then immediately get thrown onto Big Game Y, and then crunch again on Big Game Y, and then crunch again on Big Game Z. Because if we're involved, usually something's wrong.
Yeah.
Like, they're behind, or they need this version pronto, or they can't miss the quarter, or whatever. And so I just, like, I'm not willing to do that myself. I'm not going to ask anyone else to do it either. So generally, that's, like, that's that part of it. But, like, when we're not worrying about that, we're worrying about our original thing. Like, I think the worst crunch we've ever had at IG was on Extinction, ironically enough. And we had a fair amount of time to do that game. You know, it wasn't a huge budget game. But it's like, sometimes, instead of like, when your job is to like, hey, fix the frame rate, or your job is like, you know, reduce memory, or just fix 20 bugs, or redo this store UI, that's a pretty nicely boxed up task.
Uh-huh.
When it's like, hey, this isn't fun yet.
Right, find the fun.
It's like, it's fun. It's not fun till it is, and there's nothing you can really do about it in game development. Like, that's a truism. And the publisher was actually pretty good, like, by giving us more time and more money and more time, more money. But we got to the limits of their patience too, and then people just started working hard. And I'm like, as long as it's like one of these things, as a studio, it's like, you walk the halls, you try to figure out why they're doing it, right? Do they feel like they have to be here, right? Or are they doing it because they want to do it? And I think Extinction is probably the one game we did the worst job of that on for us.
Mm-hmm.
KI, we did a great job. Like, yeah. KI was like, you know, it was a big team by our standards. It was like 70 people at peak, which is a really big team for seasons 2 and 3. And it was immense pressure because it's free to play. And there's like a game coming out, like something coming out every month,
mm-hmm.
right? It's like the mail. You can't stop it. If you screw that up, your monetization just drops. You have to, players have to know stuff's coming and when. And we almost didn't crunch at all on that project. That's one we did a really good job on, with the same kind of thing where it's like, hey, this character's not fun yet.
Yeah.
Okay, well, what are we going to do about that? Well, we'll figure it out tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know? So.
Well, how do you solve that problem? If you're in a position, like when you've been on KI or like Divekick or any of the other original projects you guys are doing,
yeah, yeah.
How do you solve that problem of like, okay, this character isn't fun yet. How do you schedule for that?
You need a good partner to work through those issues with, right? Like, in most of our experiences in all those things, we've had pretty decent partners that understand, right? And their first answer is never, why don't you guys just work harder? Right, it's never that. It's like, okay, well, maybe we could pull this thing in, mm-hmm. and instead of like releasing, Rash in that month, we'll do this new online mode. Is there a way we could pull the online mode in if Rash isn't fun yet, or whatever it is, right?
And just give it an indefinite amount of time to make Rash fun.
So at that point in KI, we were also pretty competent in like we knew how big the box could get.
Uh-huh.
Like, it never takes more than 12 weeks to make a character.
Got it.
It just doesn't.
Got
right?
it.
And we've done enough of them. We're really sure about that. Now, we'd often schedule for 8,
uh-huh.
but if we bumped into one that ended up taking 12, then we would just like, okay, we need to pull something else in so we have something to release, and Microsoft was great about working with us on that stuff.
Yeah.
That's one thing they were really cool about and understanding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So. What about something where you're actually starting from scratch and like doing your own thing as opposed to taking over like with KI, someone
yeah.
else's project, like next
yeah,
season?
Yeah, again, it's just like working with the publisher and like, again, like Maximum Games, I guess changing their name to Modus for that game, they were actually pretty cool. Their problem was like they just didn't have more money.
Uh-huh.
You know, they're a pretty small publisher, relatively speaking, to like Microsoft for sure. And so like more time was easier than more money for them. And so what we would try to do is like, okay, let's just put fewer people on for longer and just give this room to breathe and sort it out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that game, like, you know, the problem with that game is it got really repetitive.
What was the game?
Extinction.
Got it.
You know, I think most people's complaints are that it was just very repetitive.
Uh-huh.
Not that like the core of like, hey, killing these huge ogres isn't fun. It's that, wow, I don't want to do that 5,000 times, right?
Yeah.
And that's a good example of us like just, we could have changed things up and mixed things, but that would have required more time, more money, more runway.
Right, didn't
and
have
so
any
just,
of those.
Just didn't do it, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
or
yeah.
work even harder than the team already was, and uh-huh. we're just not going to do that either.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. So these days, is your ambition still to just hang out with your friends and make whatever? Are you guys like thinking like we want to make our own shit? Are you guys thinking we want to keep doing what we're doing? Are you happy with the state of the company?
Yeah, I love the company where it's at today. It is. You know, Adam joined. So Chelsea was like employee number 13, and Chelsea's our chief operating officer today, and Adam's our CEO,
mm-hmm.
and then there's me, and we're kind of like, you know, the C-suite. And then there's a whole level of directors under us that mostly report to Chelsea, and it took so long for us to get the company structure where it is right now, where we just feel like, wow, things feel great right now. Like problems, they don't take care of themselves, but I don't have to solve every problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's people at every level in the company that are empowered to do things the right way or figure out. And so, yeah, I'm super happy with where it is. You know, right now our kind of model is, hey, we have like one big creative thing we're working on at all times. We have one of those now. It's a brand new IP.
Mm-hmm. That's just you guys. You guys are
just
making
us,
this yourself.
Yeah, from scratch. And it won't get announced until probably next E3. But it's like we started that a couple months ago.
Yeah.
You know, and it's going great.
Uh-huh.
And it's like we want one thing like that in the pot at all times because like, I tend to think about like our portfolio slate as like a mutual fund, or the analogy I use that everyone on the team hates is a roulette table,
okay.
Like a craps table,
okay,
right? And so like imagine
always good to compare your business to gambling.
So imagine it gets worse, Jason.
Okay.
So imagine in this analogy, the employees are the chips.
Okay.
And so you spread some on, like, hey, a port to Oculus. You spread some on original, like, small game development, like Divekick. You spread some on, like, this big co-dev thing with Bethesda.
Yep.
You put some here, you put some here, you put some here, you put some here. Well, if it goes bust, instead of, like, the house raking those chips,
uh-huh.
I just get to put those chips on another pile.
Yeah,
you
yeah,
know?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
so, like, we always want to be doing, like, one big original thing, really risky, but high potential for reward. Some kind of middle risk stuff like co-development where we're helping a big AAA game either by doing a whole feature for them or just embedding on their team.
Uh-huh.
And then even safer, which is just a port, which is something we've done 20,000 times and no one is better at than us. And just kind of down the line, and we want to be doing a little bit of all that at once.
Mm.
And it means like if one project goes away, I don't have to let anybody go, right? I can just take the people, like with Telltale's a great example.
Mm-hmm.
We were doing 7 Days to Die and supporting 7 Days to Die. And we had a team about 12 people on that when they went out of business. And they owed us two milestones.
Oof.
They owed us, like, I don't know, it's, I guess it's, does the NDA matter at this point? They're out of business? Probably. They owe us a non-trivial amount of money.
Okay.
Right? Let's just say that.
That sucks.
And it's like.
That really sucks.
And, yeah, it wasn't a great day, but I didn't have to lay anybody off because I just took those people that were, yeah, those 12 people, uh-huh, and I called up our partners that love us and like, hey, Bethesda, I just have X engineers, Y designers, you know, two artists, three. You want them for anything?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, please. Da-da-da. Hey, you know, on and on down the list, right? And they all were working on stuff a week later. We gave them a week to do a game jam and just kind of, like, have fun with it because, uh-huh, it felt like shit.
Uh-huh.
And then after that week, they were just working on paid projects again, uh-huh, while we,
that's,
figured it out.
So with the new IP, when you guys are working on something totally new, yeah, I want to get back to that question of, like, finding the fun and, like, not being able to – because it seems so difficult from a scheduling perspective to be like, all right, we're going to prototype until we figure this out and then, yeah, question mark?
Yeah, I mean, there's, like, the – it's like the – how do you describe it? I try to describe this to my kids all, uh-huh, the time because, uh-huh, they don't get it, and it's very normal to not get it. Like, all games are bad until they're not. And often, they're not bad until the very end of the project. Or they are bad, I should say, until the very end of the project. And,
yeah,
then just everything kind of comes together.
Yeah.
And you just kind of develop a certain faith that that's going to happen.
And,
right?
Until it doesn't.
Until it doesn't. And then that's when you got to work with your partner to solve that problem, right? And, you know, on projects where, like, you know, Divekick is, like, they found the fun the first day of that project, right? It's like, hey, that's really great.
Uh-huh.
Extinction, it's like, we found the fun in that about halfway through. And now it's like, okay, what do we have, what kind of game can we make around this fun thing to do that we, time we have left or whatever? And with this new thing, it's the same kind of thing. It's like, okay, we think that's fun. Will it be fun if we add this, 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 and this to it, too? And then really, once you find it, it's just however long it takes, it's like, okay, now what can I do with that, with the resources we have left, uh-huh, right? And
so you're scheduling kind of flexibly to the point where you figure it out, and then you schedule accordingly from there?
Yeah, so it's, again, it's a lot of it is just experience-based. Like, for example, like on this new thing we're doing, I think the general feeling in the studio is like, hey, if this thing isn't fun by September, we're going to have a problem, right? And let's reassess what we're doing in September, mm-hmm, if it's not fun yet.
And if it's not fun in September, then do you, like, how do you avoid crunching to make it fun?
Again, you just got to work with our partner, right?
Yeah.
And it might be as simple as, like, there's not a lot of, like, every publisher is different, and every publisher has their own set of concerns. There's people we work with, like Blizzard, where all they care about is the gamer's experience with their product. And when we helped them with Diablo for the Switch, they were super involved in that, and they did a lot of work themselves, and the passion they have to make an amazing thing comes through. And it's so fun to work on stuff like that because you know, hey, if this thing isn't right yet, or it could be even better, or the user experience isn't where they want it to be, they're going to give you more time to do it. And then there's publishers maybe on the other end of the spectrum who are
fiscal quarter. That's what matters.
And for those publishers, we don't take risky projects with them.
Got it.
We'll just do, oh, that's a port from PS4 to PC. You need 6 months? Gotcha, boss. We can,
yeah,
do, like,
yeah, yeah.
I could probably do that myself.
So right? The trick is just knowing who to sign, yeah, up with what, yeah, deal.
It's
to.
Understanding your partners and what motivates them and taking the right deal with the right partner.
Interesting.
And, you know, there's a breaking point for everyone, you know? Everyone is eventually going to say, hey, sorry. Like, we're out of time or,
yeah,
money.
Yeah.
And then as a studio head, it's just up to us to, like, okay, that's the result we got this time.
Uh-huh.
You know? And what can we learn from this so it doesn't happen again?
Yeah, right? So as a studio head, if you were in that position, like, have you been forced to ask people to crunch, to work extra hours because the partner came to you and said, hey, we are out of time and money?
Like, no. We've never asked anyone to crunch. I believe there's been, like I mentioned, on, like, Extinction is the worst job
we did.
Is, like, a studio head, like, managing crunch.
Mm-hmm.
We could have done a better job on that project for sure, but we never asked anyone, and we never, like, the only time people, when I think about the projects, like, people worked the longest hours on, it was, like, Third Strike Online Edition, which was the first kind of port we did, but that wasn't, like, crunching. That was, like, people are excited, like, oh, hey, Coleman's going to get online working tonight. Let's get some pizzas and play online for the first time. Right,
it's different when it's a one night thing, as I said before.
Yeah, and
months on end is a whole different world.
Right, and so it's not. I have this conversation with other studio heads,
uh-huh,
and I'm like, it's really just as simple as you deciding to do it.
Yeah,
Like, if you decide this is how I'm going to run the company, it's already done.
That's right? Interesting.
It's just done.
Well, like, I was going to ask you, yeah, so, like, what kind of, how could a AAA studio take this philosophy?
Okay, it depends what publisher they work for.
Sure.
Right? Like, there's some publishers who are very quarterly driven.
Mm-hmm.
And
but that sounds like most publishers. Like, any publicly traded company is going to have to be quarterly driven.
But some have, like, a wide enough slate where if one game misses here or there or whatever, it's not as big a deal or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's people like Bethesda who aren't publicly traded at all, right? And so there's, like, more and more, like, private investments, like, from, you know, from China or Korea or whatever, the way they tend to equity invest in projects. Like, not the same problem, right? And so, but the point being is, like, I think the way people are trying to solve this problem in those spaces is they're trying to, like, smaller teams, iterate with a small team until you know this thing's good, right? And then at that point, you should also have a really good idea about what it would take to finish it, you know? Like, just beat enough unknowns out of the project where it'll get more predictable. And then you like, fire up, like, 10 prototypes like that, and then the best two you promote to a AAA game with a $50 million budget.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the way big studios are trying to handle it, and I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
It's just, that's not enough to stop people from crunching.
Uh-huh. Well, and then the other argument is that, like, if you are a Naughty Dog or, like, a studio, a rock star, a studio with Game of the Year ambitions that wants to make literally, like, the best thing on the market, yeah, then they feel like they're compelled to. They feel like they have to.
And, I mean, and listen, I'm not here to tell anybody don't do that. It's not my job to tell people what to do with their lives, right? I can't tell, because when I was a certain age, I would have loved to work at Naughty Dog,
right,
and work whatever. I don't even know if they crunch. I really don't know much about them. But let's for
they,
the sake
they crunch.
Okay, so it's, let's for the sake of this analogy say that's true.
Yes,
I would have loved that job, right? And there's a point in my life where I would have. This is really just as simple as I'm not there anymore.
Yeah,
and it's not. I'm not gonna force anybody else to do that.
Yeah. You know? So you're saying we need more old people running studios?
Did you call me old? God, Jason.
Yeah. You're saying we need more people with kids running studios.
We need more seasoned veterans.
No, but it feels like a lot of these studios really are actually run by veterans, but they're just, yeah, like, we have different, they have different goals, I guess.
Yeah.
They have different goals.
Again, like, yeah, goal, like, I think that's probably a good way to put it. Like,
yeah.
I don't know anyone that started a studio for the reasons we started Iron Galaxy.
Yeah.
Right? And that
to hang out with your friends.
Yeah, just I want to make games with my friends till I die.
Yeah.
That's all I want to do.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I don't care what they are.
How many
care
of your friends from Midway are still there with you?
Yeah, the first, I think the first seven of us, I bet it numbers like 15 of the first 20 were all from Midway,
mm-hmm,
and they're all still there.
Huh.
So, the core group is, like, strong.
That's awesome.
We actually don't have a lot of, people tend to stay. Like, you know, the thing about Iron Galaxy is you can make more money doing other things,
mm-hmm,
like, inside of games even, you know, like, like, fuck going to Google or Facebook. Like, you can go to a studio right down the street and make more money than you do for us.
Oh.
But we
and work twice as many hours.
Yeah, we tend to attract and find people that value what we value. You know, like, this is, like, I used to have this conversation with everybody that before they started, and I still try to have it during the interview process, but we're so big now I kind of don't get to do it anymore.
Uh-huh.
But when people are interviewing, I'd be like, hey, just so you know, this is what this job is. And it's probably not for everybody, and I want you to figure out if it's for you.
Uh-huh.
If you want to go somewhere and work on one epic experience for 5 years, and you cradle to grave it, this is not the job for you.
Yeah.
If you want to help ship up a handful of things a year, if you want to jump from, like, hey, I'm doing rendering engineering, to working on the UI, to doing physics stuff, to doing gameplay, mm-hmm, and I contributed it to 4 games that shipped this year, if, like, that kind of varying problem set sounds good to you and you're excited about that, and also you can just go home at 6 every day, like, unsurprisingly, we... like, that attracts a certain type of developer, and they tend to stay. So, you know, it's less valuable, I think, for young people. Any retention issues we do have tend to skew a little, like, people out of school or whatever,
mm-hmm,
that,
mm-hmm,
you know, maybe don't know what they want yet, or maybe they do know what they want, and they figure out it's not us. Again, like, I'm not saying this is the right way to run a studio or the only way. It's what works for us, though.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, yeah. Well, it's a very different type of studio. I mean, you're not, you guys aren't, like, the gamers. Like gamers aren't being like, oh, my God, CD Projekt Red, Naughty Dog, and Iron Galaxy are my favorite developers.
Yeah, we're like, exactly. Like, yeah, we're no, like, there's one dude who I know where their favorite developer.
Yeah.
You know? he's some dude who lives in Kenya, right? He just loves Killer Instinct, right?
That's awesome.
It's like, it's the one person I know of, right?
Yeah.
And, like, you know, point of fact is, like, most people know me from being an idiot on Giant Bomb,
uh-huh,
not because I'm like Tim Schafer and I made these games they
right.
love.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And I'm just completely cool with that.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
like,
you're
I
happy
don't
that.
Care.
Yeah.
I just don't give a shit.
That's
know?
Cool. No, yeah. It's a cool philosophy. And like I said, all I hear from folks who work over there in the Chicago dev scene, unlike a certain other company that works near you guys are known as having like really good work-life balances. Yeah. I wanted to ask you, we have to wrap things up, but I am curious.
Here's the zinger.
Speaking of no, this is what are you waiting
I'm waiting for?
What are you trying to hide
I'm
over
not,
here?
I'm just waiting for what. Listen, I know you, Schreier.
No,
I know what you do.
I'm curious. So you mentioned Tim Schafer. It seems like there are very few independent studios remaining these days.
Yeah, it's
like
great.
Tim just sold to Microsoft.
Every time someone gets bought, we make more money. It's fantastic.
Really?
Oh,
so
yeah.
You guys are happy about that because nobody else is doing the outsourcing work that you guys are.
It's just or anything. Like again, like we've come to the point now. I think in our arc when people know we can do everything,
mm-hmm.
right? They know we can do original games. They know we can help them ship their stuff. Like, there's not a lot of debate about, like, that we'll do quality stuff, right? And every other developer that gets snatched up, there's fewer people to call.
Uh-huh.
You know, the Rolodex is getting skinnier. And I think it's, you know, Boardman gets paid, you know? We're going to be okay.
Yeah. Well, the question I was going to ask is, do you think you can stay independent for the foreseeable future?
That's not an explicit goal.
Okay.
The only goal I have is I want to work with my friends for the next 30 years.
Got it.
That's my only goal.
Well, but if you were owned by a company that had publicly, like, fiscal quarters, then
yeah, but you know,
be
but
much
it, but it doesn't exclude ownership in the right situation either.
Sure.
But it's not, you know, that's not part of the goal. The only uh-huh. goal is, like, let's do whatever we can to maximize stability.
Yeah.
Let's make sure we have a product slate that makes a lot of sense, that, you know, it kind of indemnifies us from the volatility in the industry,
mm-hmm.
and let's make sure that people never want to leave.
Yeah,
you know, and those are the ways we optimize for our goals.
So, if someone out there is listening to this and they're like a producer, a project manager, or a studio head, even, and they're like, you know what, I want to try to emulate Dave Lang and Iron Galaxy, your advice to them would be make it a priority to like avoid.
It's, you know what? It's not. It's really just make the decision.
Just being like, this is how we do things.
This is part of our core. Like every company. Whether you've talked about them or not, like, you have core values,
mm-hmm.
right? We talk about our core values a lot and how we represent those. And if one of your core values is treating your people well and not making assumptions, not making decisions on for them and for their lives, it's not hard. It's not hard. Like, you just have to do it.
Right, yeah. Right. You just have. You might have to sacrifice other
No, sorry, I shouldn't say it's not hard. For our company, it's not hard.
Right.
Like, if I was a company that only did huge creative things
right.
for a handful of publishers,
right.
that would be almost impossible.
Right.
But maybe it's time to change something then.
Cool. Well, Dave Lang, thank you so much for coming on the show. And, yeah, have a good rest of your E3.
It's almost over.
Yeah, almost yeah. over. All right. See you later.
Kotaku Split Screen is an official podcast of Kotaku.com. It's produced by Kirk Hamilton, Maddie Myers, and me, Jason Schreier. Kirk edits and mixes the podcast and also wrote and performed our theme song and other music. We're a part of the Fusion Podcast Network, where Mandana Mofidi is executive producer of audio. You can find us on popular podcast services like Panoply, NPR One, Google Play, and Apple Podcasts, and we hope you leave us a review if you like what you hear. Find old episodes at Kotaku.com/splitscreen or email us at splitscreen@kotaku.com.